Here's an email from Jillian for Adam. Could you please ask Adam what he knows about using digestive bitters to improve digestion? There are many on the market right now that are made from herbs, citrus peels. I'm wondering if there's any info on them, as well as it's okay to take them with each meal or afterwards or before.
Well, we have five basic tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes out of Oriental medicine, and it's pretty accurate. Sugar is the first chakra. Salt is the second chakra. Pungent is the third chakra. Sour is the fourth chakra. And bitter is the fifth chakra. So they are indeed very good for us. And I get mine through coffee.
Yeah, you get your little bitter there. That's bitter, right?
Even tea is bitter, too. So there are other bitters, and definitely Swedish bitters, those type of bitters are good. We Americans tend to leave it out of the diet now, but always for digestion, people would always eat some bitter foods and bitter herbs. So, yes, they are good. I would just eat them on time. If it's a bitter root, I'm going to eat it at nighttime. If it's a bitter plant, I'm going to eat it in the middle of the day, a vine or a grain. And if it's a bitter, coffee, which is on a tree, or coca, which is obviously bitter, cacao, then I'm going to eat that bitter. So, yes, bitters are excellent for our health and resonate with the fifth chakra, the thyroid.
Oh, good for our thyroid, yeah. Yeah, I kind of like him. You know, I've been using Daniel Vitalis's bitters, and he just came out with, and I don't know all the ingredients. I can read them to you, but they're fun. You just spray a couple sprays before your dinner, and my tummy likes it. Here's an email from Ken. What type of brand do you suggest? Small Willow Flow. Oh, that's for me personally. This is for Adam. I had read once that when schools switched from blackboards to whiteboards, student attention and retention decline. Is that true? And could you explain why? And what about the impact of these colors on the eyes and overall health in general for the artist whose work is in black ink or white paper?
It's true. Blackboard, you get better memory because do this experience. You've seen those pinpoint glasses?
Yeah, I got some. Yeah.
Okay. Now, make your own, or take the ones you have and paint them white, and then look through them and see what happens.
What happens?
You can't use them.
Why is? Oh, you can't. I've got. Let me put some on right now. I got some here. If I come across some real small print, I gotta put them on. So if you paint them white, then nothing happens.
Yeah, if you paint the side that you're looking through white, doesn't matter if the other side, it's the side you look through. If you see white, you can't see it anymore. So, yeah, it makes a profound change. And indeed, we were better off with a black blackboard. Black does promote learning. And the color yellow and green and the in-between, what Gaudi Ali calls lemon, which is actually a yellow, green, or chartreuse, is very good for learning as well as a color. But white is not that good for learning. It's more for enjoyment.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, it's fun with blackboards. You can make those great noises, you know, it's fingernails and all that stuff, you know. It's
cool. I'm cringing already. I didn't even
I know.
Thinking about it.
You know.
We used to do that all the time in school. You probably did, too.
brings back memories of the nuns on the blackboard, right?
We didn't have nuns, but we did that kind of stuff.
You didn't have nuns. We had those nuns with the big reindeer kind of things, hats. You ever see those really huge ones? Right? And then you could throw little pieces of paper in there when they weren't looking. That was.
What's black and white and red all over?
I don't know.
A newspaper thought I was going to say a bleeding nun, didn't you?
No, I didn't see it. Oh, God. let's see. Do you have any opinion using sodium alginate as a metal chelator? From Wayne. Never even heard of that one. Metal sodium alginate.
Yeah, we used to sell it in the health food store. It's a seaweed product, and it's just as bad as carrageenan. So, no.
No, I don't want that.
Mm. It does chelate metal, but it does damage also.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose if I had an emergency and had nothing else, and I had a heavy metal that I knew I could chelate out, and it was in the right place, which would be unlikely, then I could use it. But they still sell it at health food stores. We sold it back in the 70s and 80s, and it's really at the, I'd treat it just like you would carrageenan.
I have performed multiple searches trying to find the timeline formula for repeated trauma-based events. I think it was Dr. Massey who shared with your audience, but I might be wrong. You find an event plot out so many years prior, and then so many years prior to that. Oh, do you know anything about that kind of thing?
One of Jung's students, Maria von Franz, wrote a book to show that numbers are actual. And I find that our brain subconsciously uses those numbers from a physiological standpoint. If you look at the periodic table of the elements, which is 1 through, they're up to about 120 now, I believe. If you take the odd numbers versus the even numbers, you're going to get different reactions. These are called frequencies. So if I take a tone and divide it in half, you get overtones. And I had an expert once show me how they do this in the Middle East. I would sing a tone like, and then he, who had perfect pitch, would get half of that. And you would get high as a kite. Then he told me, now imagine if you did that tone, I did the half tone, someone else did the half tone on my half tone, and someone did the half tone on that, what your brain would feel like on drugs, but on sonic drugs. So yes, it makes a difference. And what you do in your, I'm 76 revolutions around the sun now, so I would take 7 plus 6 and get 11. So what I was doing at 11 is what I'm going through now, and what I was doing at 2 years and 2 months is also, in the fetus, is what I was doing. So those are very real things. I remember getting criticized on saying that an odd number could help you lose weight and an even gain weight, but this is the way it works. Numbers are archetypes. Jung proved it, and Maria von Franz wrote a book about it. Its name escapes me, but maybe I'll put it on the on either the bottom of this show or my next blog or something. So yes, it makes a very different. Now the timeline, my timeline differs a little from Dr. Massey's, but the theory is definitely there, and for those who research, you will find that numerology comes out of the periodic table of the elements. We have the Odd Fellows Lodge, but there's no Odd Women's Lodge. And that's why you'll find the odd numbers actually are much more active. Much more active, the odd numbers. The even numbers are very sedate in the periodic table. So it's kind of like the triangle. John Lilly talked about this. If you have a triad, you have tension on an odd number. If you have a couple, that's fine. But say the third person comes in as a romantic interest of either sex, then you have turmoil. So every time you have an even number, you have peace and serenity. And every time you have an odd number, you have the others. Now, you can expect that in your age. When I become 77, that should mean more turmoil than when I was 76, and you divide it down to the different times. It sounds silly, but it's actual. We are made out of mathematics, and whether you call it frequency or the periods, which is a frequency of the periodic table of the element, the periodic table of frequencies, we're made out of that, and it bypasses chemistry. The electrons and the protons and the neutrons, which are three, yes, no, maybe, they actually multiply in such a way that they make frequency and quantum physics, as everyone from Jack Cruz on talks about how that makes chemistry obsolete. And indeed, I agree with Jack Cruz on that one.
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah, speaking of that, we've been talking in his office, and we're going to get Jack on soon. He's wild. Yeah, he's great. He's just into all kinds of fun stuff. So what's he saying that So this whole chemistry thing is just, it's just something we've been playing with, but it's just really quantum physics and more other than physical.
Well, applied atomics. Once you get into the atomic nature of reality, you've left chemistry behind. Mm-hmm. Chemistry is in the electron. That's why light is inferior to other forms of energy, because I need an electron microscope to see into deeper levels of reality. Light stops. It only has a certain frequency where it be you're looking at darkness. So they had to throw away the light microscope and get to the electron microscope. So obviously, since chemistry is built on light, you go below that into the audible life stream is what they're talking about. That's what quantum reality is. Mm-hmm. They call it Mahasoon and Soon, or the rings pass not in Blavatsky. It's a very real thing, and it's technically known as surface tension.
Wayne wants to know your opinion on telomeres. Some places you can test your telomeres to see how long they are. There's other places that test to see how many you have. Do you know anything about telomeres?
Well, I know that I want short telomeres, because the long telomeres mean you're vulnerable to cancer. As the researchers have thrown out the telomere theory now, and you'll find that Johns Hopkins and other ones have gone, moved beyond it. But some people are still stuck in it. And again, that's a perfect example how a fact, in quotation marks, has blocked further research into telomeres. So I'm not very interested in my telomeres, because probably next year it's going to be fashionable again.
Yeah. Now you got to have medium ones or something like that, or more. This is a good.
But if you look at the latest research, they've left that behind.
Oh, Johns Hopkins.
Well, other ones, Harvard, mm-hmm. Johns Hopkins, Stanford, the places that are doing the longevity research, which I'm in touch with, because here in Montecito, people live into 100 regularly, because they have the access to the doctors that other people don't have, because they have the money for the second, third, fourth, and fifth opinion. There is a lady here who writes a column called Aging in High Heels. All of her family died in their 50s or 60s from cancer. She got that cancer and went to the doctor and says, chemotherapy right away. She said, I'm not going for it. She went to another doctor, chemotherapy right away. She went to a third one, chemotherapy right away. She went to UCLA. Well, you know, we have this other treatment. 20 years later, she should have been dead 1 month after the other doctors told her, even with the chemotherapy, which they were still going to give her. And 20 years later, she's still writing her column in the Montecito Journal and is on the internet. So you have the money and you can use medical research. They can actually cut the stones out of the gallbladder. Why don't they do it? Because it's easier, cheaper, and faster to run people through. But people with money, believe me, they keep their gallbladders, because they know without a gallbladder, your heart is vulnerable. Now, you can use, just like you have a car, you can use stick shift to get around that. But your automatic function is gone once you remove the gallbladder, which is a shunt for the heart, 180 degrees, heart time 1 to 3 at noon, and 11 to 1 at noon, and then 11 to 1 at night is gallbladder time. The two are often mistaken. A gallbladder attack is often mistaken for a heart attack, and the other one. One way to tell is if your right arm gets numb, it's a gallbladder attack. If your left arm gets numb, it's a heart attack.
Heart attack. Adam Bergstrom, yep. Patrick Timpone, good morning. Andrew will be here tomorrow. The crazy pharmacist Steve Mitchell on Thursday. Let's see. We have emailer here. In recovery from lower intestine rectal bleeding and ulcers. A fairly healthy diet, but have used canola oil in cooking for many years. And I suspect this may be been a detrimental effect on the GI tract. Any ideas of the causes, possible remedies? So lower intestinal rectal bleeding could be a lot of things, I guess, huh?
A lot of things. In my case, for starting in the 90s, and I didn't realize it was DHA and my tuna fish and my mayonnaise doing it, I would have to wipe very carefully and actually, with my pants down, do that little walk to the sink and wet the toilet paper so I didn't be abusive on my butt. Then I discovered oranges at spleen time. Now I could sandpaper my butt and not have any problem with it. So that took care of that once I realized that the tuna fish, the mayonnaise, and those type of foods that cause yellow fat disease were causing it. And it's gotten rid of, actually, seven problems have been gotten rid of since I switched to oranges and got rid of omega-3s.
Oh, you mean with the mayonnaise, with the mayo?
Yeah, with the tuna.
With the tuna.
Well, actually, I was fortunate. I couldn't afford the water tuna, so I was eating the olive one, and all the DHA was bleeding into the olive oil, and I didn't eat the olive oil, so I was getting minimum. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be speaking to you today. I would probably be dead by now.
Well, you're gonna enjoy hearing from Jack Cruz. I think he's eating fish like twice a day now. Because he thinks
lots of luck, Jack. That's one place where I diverge from him. There's something about Jack I really like. But by the way, we've had our little Facebook confrontation already about this, I document in one of my. I've written 8 books on yellow fat disease, and I'm about an eighth way through number 9. Though I've lost interest in it. It's getting really boring to me to write about yellow fat disease. Mm-hmm. By the way, Monsanto is fighting yellow fat disease. You'll be less likely to get it, but because of the glyphosate in their new Vistiv Gold soybean, there's other diseases besides yellow fat disease. And yellow fat disease is a very slow killer. It's called old age, basically. Now, faster versions are Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, early onset dementia, Lou Gehrig's disease, all of those. Those, look them up. They're loaded with lipofuscin, and I believe I just posted on 2 blogs back, if you go in the comments section, I showed how much lipofuscin is in all of those. They're lipofuscin, cumulative lipofuscin diseases that are sped up a little faster to phase us out. I called it making younger people older faster.
So you're just not a fan of even good old Atlantic fresh kind of fish.
Fish is good when you want to reproduce. It makes you horny. It's a sperm and an ovum, so it's great. But you don't find, if you really check out fish eaters, they don't make it to centenarians generally if they eat complete fish. And some seafaring communities actually feed their fish to cows. Cows are not just vegetarians. They'll eat anything. They have fed cows completely nothing but fish. But these type of societies, they just don't produce longevity unless they do other things. You go to Japan, and they do. But let's take Okinawa. They don't eat fish. They're on an island. Why wouldn't they eat fish? They eat pork, and they eat potatoes. And you go to Costa Rica, another blue zone. They have access to the ocean. Well, they eat pork. And they eat beans, by the way, lots of beans. And they are the longest people living on Earth in blue zones. You've had the guests who went and examined these various places right there.
So what are some of your ideal nighttime foods then if you don't do, you don't? So you don't eat any fish at all now?
Well, at this point I'm not, but if I was in my childbearing years and wanted to have healthy kids, then I would be doing it because – you know, we get horny with estrogen. Estrogen, besides being a stress chemical, is also an example of a sympathetic nervous system. See, the sympathetic nervous system produces both, it produces adrenaline, and it also produces dopamine, which makes you sexy. These two systems are unconscious. We have a central nervous system that is in the middle of the Kundalini force between Ida and Pingala in yoga. That's what determines what the autonomic system is going to do. And that's what we want to really go by. Then we can control either one of those systems, good or bad, by our conscious living. Anyway, to make a long story short, if you have some fish at nighttime at the right time, mm-hmm. it's not be toxic. They have selenium. They have all kinds of things in a fish that are beneficial, and they don't just have polyunsaturated fatty acids. Now, how it was healthy in other societies? They ate the whole fish. They ate the eyeballs. They ate the thyroid.
Sure. Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
That's when it's healthy. Most Americans don't, so they will pay a price for that by not eating as much of the fish as possible. But eating some fish at night, every once in a while, I used to love pickled herring. They now have them in glass bottles because I won't buy anything in a plastic bottle. They have it at Lazy Acre, so I bought some because I had missed herring and had it about 6 months ago. And every once in a while, if I feel like having a little herring at night, I will. It's not going to kill anybody. See, to say it takes a month or a year off your age, you can't say that because attitude factors in, nutrients you're taking, saunas, all these things add in to what our health is. So to just say this is going to kill you would be ridiculous. So eat your fish and enjoy it. I just say it's better to eat it at night. Eat time to live in time.
Yeah. Oh, what do you think about that? I've mentioned this several times. I don't know if I've ever asked you where Boyd Haley, you know, the real University of Kentucky man that really studied mercury probably longer than anybody, conjectured that all the things in fish made the mercury not absorbable in the human body. And he actually said that on the air when we talked to him 10 years ago.
Well, number one, Dirk Pearson went into that in detail. And so I never worried about that because I would take brewer's yeast and also garlic, which has selenium in, and protect myself even furthermore out of any other. And to go to the next step, point two, Swami Nitty Gritty recommended mercury for certain things to get rid of the sugar blues and stuff. So trace amounts of mercury, I don't care what you eat, fish, beets, sugar, whatever you're eating, you're getting mercury in your body.
Yeah.
And tiny amounts are okay. I don't agree with Dr. Nunley's. You can't have one single atom of mercury in there.
No, that was not Nunley. It was Huggins. Huggins.
Oh, not excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it was Huggins, right? He was a mercury monster, boy, wasn't he? God.
He was. And right away, homeopathy is based on that. Now, the New Age does vaccinations too. They just changed the name to hormesis. What do you think that is? It's a vaccination. Only the vaccinations they use, fish oil and egg and carrageenan and things they put in the vaccines, because Dr. Cowan is exactly right. The actual dead virus
doesn't do anything.
You have to entrain it with one of these. Well, now I hear Mercola and these doctors talking about hormesis. It's the same thing. So there's nothing wrong with a vaccination if you do it naturally, but these people that are doing vaccinations through drug companies, they're killing people. They may be saving them, as Dr. Cowan pointed out, right now for now, but later on, you're cutting the age off people. How many of you, I've noticed this now, my friends are dying, their parents are still alive. In some cases, their grandparents are still alive. And indeed, if you check the statistics, the curve is going downward now. We actually enhance life, not through medical technology, but through hygiene. We were getting rid of scarlet fever and cholera and all these diseases. It was going up. Now it's declining thanks to glyphosate and the witch's brew that Monsanto puts into their product. Glyphosate is water soluble. It's not as harmful as the other chemicals they have in there. They're all harmful, but the oil soluble ones they mix with the glyphosate, even worse. Yet nobody concentrates on those other chemicals. I don't even know most of their names.
Is this hormesis, Adam? Is that similar to this homeoprophylaxis kind of natural vaccine? Is that what you call hormesis?
It's a vaccination whether you do it or not. Vaccination is a real thing. It's called homeopathy. It was invented by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann. Probably he got it from back further, but he's the one that gets credit for it in 1806 or so. And basically, his idea of hormesis is a poison works on a poison. So if I get a burn, a serious burn, and I put ice on it, that's how an allopath would handle it. But a homeopath would stick it back in the boiling water, but just briefly, take it out immediately. They would get healed in a day, and the other person would take maybe a month or two to get healed. And that's been validated, that putting ice on a burn is not a very smart thing to do. Hmm. It's an allopathic strategy. Nowadays, our doctors aren't allopaths anymore. They've gone to toxicomolecular medicine and allopathy detoxed. A homeopath never detoxes, because detoxing is, it's coming out. You bleed the blood out, you poop it out, you urinate it out, you sweat it out, you saliva spit it out, you puke it out through a purgative and a emagogue and all those. But that's actually the true meaning of allopathic medicine. But not many doctors do detoxification these days.
Well, if you go back to homeopathy and say, like Hahnemann, if you would do just like a, I don't believe in preventing measles or mumps. I think that's a scam. But let's just pick, pick out something that you might want to vaccinate for. What would it be? Smallpox? I don't know.
You know, there are certain things.
What would be something you might want to vaccinate for? Just pick one, because I want to ask you a question. Smallpox? Mm-hmm.
Smallpox comes to mind.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay, so let's just say smallpox. So did Hahnemann say early on then, well, if you just give just a little bit, teeny bit of smallpox, then the body would build some kind of immunity for it? Is that what he said?
I don't think he did go into the viruses at that time. One thing they didn't know about it. Regular chemicals. But that would be the principle.
But Cowan suggests that, and as you agreed with him, that when you just put the live virus in there without the adjuvants, the body doesn't react to it. So that model doesn't seem like it would work anyway without the adjuvants, right?
Except we usually have the adjuvants in our body from the additives and excipients and chemicals that we're eating in our regular diet, unfortunately. But they just have made it more scientific. You know, the idea of hormesis works, it's like a friend of mine, and this could have been shortening his life. He collected rattlesnakes. So what did he do? He took the vaccine and he got a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. So finally, a snake could bite him, no problem. You know, rattlesnake bit him. He didn't even have to do anything for it. So there is a that's an example of hormesis, and it's a type of vaccination. So it gets confusing, but right now, all of this vaccination for diseases that actually give us immunity. In fact, measles is hormesis for further diseases down the line, like cancers and things. So the whole idea of people dying of measles, the one person that dies of it, about 100 times more will die earlier because of the vaccination. And that's the scam that they put over on the American people. Yeah. Right now, you know, when we're anti-vaccination, we're considered almost terrorists.
I know.
Kelly, he says something against vaccinations, they're treating him like he's a terrorist.
Who's that?
Jim Carrey.
Oh, Jim Carrey, yeah.
He came out against vaccinations, and they're attacking him, and anyone who's a celebrity, because people that don't have any kind of celebrity, they let him talk. They're just a weirdo. But as soon as you happen to be someone that has status, a politician or an actor or a director, and you have a name out there, then they attack them pretty quickly.
Hi, Patrick and Adam. I've got a problem with my ankles, writes Carol. They're tingling, crampy, sore in the morning, restless all day. Restless ankles. I usually stand up most of the day. When I take a break to sit down, I just feel like getting up again and dancing. It's like they always want to be on the move. So we've heard of restless aches, so she's kind of got a restless ankle kind of thing going on.
I had that happening too from yellow fat disease. It went completely away with the orange. So the orange is kind of what would you call it when you have one remedy?
Silver bullet.
Yeah, silver bullet. I really am a big fan of oranges and get them every day.
What time? So 9 to 11?
Yeah, because remember when I was on the ranch when I first met you, I was studying with Chen, and one day we stood all day and did Tai Chi, all day, I mean till midnight, and after the workshop was over, I sat down and the owners of the ranch, the wife said, what's wrong with your ankle? And holy cow, it was swelled up like a balloon, which had never happened to me before. Well, it went away, and that was the end of it. But when I got here, one day, for about 3 or 4 days, it swelled up. And then the ankle was, it went down by itself, but it was still slightly larger than the other one. And then it happened a second time. Then when I found out about the orange and thing, that's never happened now. My ankles are skinny, and I'm not going to have any problem with edema, which many people have just because of the imbalance with acid and alkaline, or basically a form of yellow fat disease. You don't only get it from DHA and ALA and EPA. You get it from other things too, estrogen, nitric oxide, there's histamine, cortisol. There's a whole bunch of other witch's brew of chemicals that people need to avoid and learn about it. Hippocrates, what did he say? First, do no harm. Well, that's my philosophy. Cut out the bad things first and then add the good things. And you may not even have to add the good things, because once you eliminate the bad things, what's left but neutral and good?
So you think Carol could just do oranges, orange juice, some fresh organic oranges, squeeze them between 9 and 11 in the morning. That's solar time. So on daylight savings, it would be 10 to 12, right? And it would help her a little restless?
It worked for me.
I'll be done.
That's and it worked for people, because I've communicated with other people. And by the way, a lot of these ideas come from Ray Peet. I'm not a Peetarian. There's things I definitely disagree with. You won't see me taking aspirin. You won't see me taking Coca-Cola. You won't see me taking orange juice mixed with my coffee and things like that. So I'm not really a Peetarian, although I admire many of his ideas, and they have helped me, and I believe the man is sincere. And he is 80-something years old and only goes to a doctor when he has to get a driver's license in Mexico or something like that. Otherwise, he hasn't been to a doctor since he was forced to go by his parents when he was 9 years old.
So he does pretty good. A Peetarian, that's a Ray Peet guy. We haven't talked to him for years. Maybe we'll invite him on the show again and talk to him and see what he's up to.
Ray Peet. Listen to hours of him. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. And your show, have your viewers go back and listen to him. Your interview is one of the best ones of him.
Oh, Patrick. Really? Oh, good.
Yeah, it was really good, really good.
Just put Ray Peet in our search engine. You can hear Ray Peet. But he's still going around. Does he live in Australia, doesn't he?
No, he lives in Eugene, Oregon, and then he spends time up in the mountains in Mexico, somewhere around, near big mountains. He's big on high altitudes as being healthy for you, you know, over 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 feet. And indeed, cancer rates are down there, so he's right about that. I knew about that before I ever heard Ray Peet's name mentioned.
What do you suppose the altitude thing is?
Well, some of it may not be that. I suspect that drinking water runs downhill,
And
it's poop. So I think a lot of people, I have a friend of mine that whose mother buys real estate, and she always gets real estate high up. In Montecito here, there's no one above us really, so the well water that we get here is not going to be near as toxic as the stuff further down the hill from us, because poop rolls downhill.
Yeah, and boy, you get in some of those mountains, you catch every now and then you get some really good cold springs coming out of those mountains, and whew, I bet that's good water.
And we're known for the hot springs. The hot springs are famous. It's probably how Montecito got on the map first place. People came out to the healing sulfur springs.
Sulfur.
And by the way, I'm on the, I don't use sulfur, but I'm on the sulfur hour now for 5 or 6 years. Every week, I think I've only missed one or two weeks during the evacuation.
I'll be done.
But there's a guy named Phil Honig that has a sulfur cream. We call him the King of Iowa. He's a really nice guy. He's got a lot of amazing sulfur stories, including one happened to him when his heart went amok here recently. And he might be a good guest for you. He's an organ maker, interesting character. And
you know, that name sounds so familiar. Do I know him, Phil Hornick?
You may have. He takes the sulfur now and put it in a cream that he can apply, and he sells it to people. So you might even keep it in your store. But at the very least, he has amazing sulfur stories. The best sulfur stories I've ever heard come from Phil Hornick.
So, how do you spell his last name?
H-O-E-N-I-G, I believe.
Yeah, boy, I know that guy.
I can get you his email because he's a regular on the Sulphur Hour now for several years.
Oh, will you? Okay, good. Yeah. Boy, I think I know him. Does he have a past in Austin, Texas, Phil Honig?
I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe.
He's in Iowa, and then he does organs. He does organs for the Mormon Church. He's an amazing musician. That alone is an interesting story. And he's a distant relative of Joseph Smith as well, though he's not really a practicing Mormon by any means.
Yeah, you mentioned Dedema. Here's Nancy. She says, I went to a massage person. She told me that I have a bit of edema going on to cut back on my salt. I love the pickling canning salt to cook with, so should I just cut back on salt or Redmond salt to cook with? Is edema caused by too much salt?
I tripled my salt. Salt actually is the cure for our edema. Yeah. Now, you have to be careful with that. Some people have reactions to kidneys where they don't do. You can have an allergy or a food intolerance with anything. But generally, salt is what drops blood pressure. Salt is what gets rid of edema if you do the other things in line too, like the potassium and other things from the orange and things like that. But the whole idea that salt causes edema is ridiculous. Now, Himalayan salt and some of those have other chemicals in it that could cause some problems. We use the very pure salt that we use one similar to yours, and we checked out yours and would use yours just as well. The one you were mentioning that Dr.
Huggins?
Huggins.
Oh, you mean the canning and pickling? You can get it Safeway. You guys use that one?
We just use the pure. Well, we use another one. We use the one by, of all things, Cargill. Happens to be the purest one on the market. That's pretty sick.
But it's just sodium chloride, right? That's what Dr. Huggins said was the best one to use. Yeah.
Pure salt. The other ones aren't pure salt. You get minerals, and you don't know what the mineral mix is in. So a lot of the ocean salts have atomic radiation in them, the ones in the English Channel. When you get those, what are they called? What's the name of that salt?
Celtic.
Celtic salt. They're pulled out of a radioactive area in France there, and the Himalayan salt is sometimes it's red, sometimes it's pink. You can't tell. There's also a salt out of Kauai that I used to take, but then I figured I don't need that extra iron. That's what makes it red. And I don't think it's a little bit of Himalayan salt.
No,
or Celtic.
It's not going
to kill anybody. We just decided we're cleaning up as much as possible where we can. And believe me, if you invited me to dinner and served me Himalayan salt, I'd eat it.
Of course.
Eat your pasta too.
You're invited anytime. What Adam's talking about, and Dr. Hal Huggins claimed that he did a lot of blood chemistry, and he claimed that the people that did the Morton's canning and pickling, which you can get Safeway anywhere, cheap in a box, and there's nothing else in there. It's just pure sodium chloride, right? And he said that they had better blood chemistries, better balances with the whole sodium than the people that were on sea salt. So that was his story that he stuck to his whole life. So, you know, there may be something to it. So you're just doing the pickling and canning stuff, huh?
Well, think how important sodium chloride is. I put it in my stomach. The sodium and the chloride come apart. The chloride joins with the water and forms hydrochloric acid for better digestion. Hmm. The sodium moves on and combines with carbonate to become sodium bicarbonate in my small intestine. Everything works out hunky-dory. That's why animals will travel hundreds of miles to get a salt lick.
But isn't there plenty of sodium chloride even in some of these different sea salts too?
Oh, yeah, you get it out of that, too. You just get the other things that interfere with it. I'm just going to get the
pure. Oh, I see. So you're thinking a lot of these different minerals can interfere with that little system you just laid out, the sodium chloride.
They can, but it's not as serious. Like I said, sure. If you serve me Himalayan salt, or if I don't go to restaurants anymore, but if I did and they served me that, I'd eat it.
Sure.
So there's no problem with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I want to say something interesting that I heard one of your guests talking about how you can get yttrium out of lettuce. What he doesn't realize is turmeric has the type that two bacteria in our intestines do. And no matter how much, the United States has more yttrium in it even than India and maybe Australia and places, but it doesn't have the turmeric, which actually makes the yttrium, it has piperine in it, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that makes the yttrium available to two species of our microbiome.
Like the bifido, right? You need the bifido in there?
I think, Burton was on and said lettuce. He's actually not correct. It does have yttrium, he's right, but you can't use it.
Yeah, you got to have the bifido in it from the turmeric, right?
Well, you got to have the
You got to have the bifido is separate from the turmeric itself.
Yeah, the bifido is what you're going to feed the yttrium that has been broken down to be digestible by them and used by your intestines, while the one in lettuce and stuff is highly unlikely that it'll break down correctly. Now, I think if they investigate it, there will be some broken down, but there definitely is a scientific reason for using turmeric for that purpose.
So that's what Ulri and Wayne are talking about, Blakely, the bifido and the turmeric and the curcumin. Now, how do you say it? Curcumin? Curcumin?
Curcumin, and that's not the active ingredient. The piperine is. So
the piperine, turmeric. Yeah. So that's why some people, when they did the turmeric formula, they actually put piperine and said that it worked better. Maybe that's what they were looking at.
Well, the entire turmeric, which I use the entire turmeric, because every time they take it apart, they blame us for doing something, and usually they're incorrect about it. Look at, let me see if I can pronounce it. You're going to help me, Vibrant Gal, the one in wine.
Resveratrol?
That's the one, resveratrol. That doesn't even exist in wine. It's all genetic when you buy it in the health food store. A vintner, if you go to the vintner magazines, they say it only appears for one day and disappears. And when they harvest the wine, they don't know, or the grape, they don't know if it's going to be in there or not during the developmental process. So it's totally fake. Anything you buy in a store is a GMO product when you buy resveratrol. That's the kind of thing where they make up things so they can market things.
Mm-hmm. Here's somebody that's exercising with oxygen. Adam in the past has talked about oxygen, carbon dioxide. Can you comment on his thoughts of exercising with oxygen?
Oh, it's not a good idea. If you mean breathing pure oxygen?
While you're exercising.
No, but if you need the carbon dioxide to absorb it. Without the carbon dioxide, that oxygen is going totally to waste. In fact, if you didn't have carbon dioxide, you could have all the oxygen in the world. I mean, see a dead man and try to give him oxygen, see if you can revive him. It's not going to work. But those cases of people dying from clinical death can actually be revived from the dead after they've died, a clinical death, they die and they're not really a death unto the death, as it calls it in the Bible, like Lazarus. So you can actually revive it with about 5% to 7% carbon dioxide. It will make you break out in a sweat, where when it was done in a hyperbaric chamber using that, they couldn't even see the patient, and yet he could talk again after the cancer swelled down so much that he could talk again after the hyperbaric treatment. So pure oxygen damages you, like baby's eyes. I mean, you get damaged eyes from oxygen. It damages us to have pure oxygen. With carbon dioxide, the more the better. That's why a yawn, if you do the 6-second one that most people do, it's a zero-sum game. You don't get any benefit, maybe just a little bit. But when you extend that yawn, the carbon dioxide drives the oxygen deep into the cell, and of course, oxygen does retard the growth of cancer.
So, let's see. So if you were doing like a little cannula in your nose without a mask, and you were just doing, say, an oxygen concentrator, would you be getting enough carbon dioxide in there, because it's not a full mask, to make it okay?
I would be having some extra carbon dioxide somehow. You could cheat by simply holding your breath while you're doing it. I haven't seen studies on that. Yeah. Someone familiar with the Buteyko method would be interesting to ask if they could protect themselves from that oxygen by holding their breath while they were doing it and while they're exercising. They'd have to be careful of things like the Valsalva maneuver and things like that if they're handling heavy weight, but It would be an interesting question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Doing research on it.
Here's the one for you. I soak my almonds overnight, and I just put them in a blender. Said, okay, I don't strain them. I just drink the whole mixture.
Fine. No problem whatsoever.
Take the water and everything. It's fine.
Yeah, the water's good. It has tannins in, which are the same things people take tea for, the so-called antioxidants.
I thought I heard you say the water wasn't the best stuff, no?
Oh, no, it's excellent.
Okay.
It's excellent.
Cool. Excellent. So this person's doing it good. I do a sun-sink breakfast every morning, and I've done so for 5 years. I rehydrate apricots, prunes, black mission figs, one of each. Sometimes add a banana and a smoothie. Also add grass-fed whey protein to this mixture, and at times I add colostrum. I do sometimes feel a bit of a crash in energy. Few hours afterwards, I have this drink. Let's see what his question here, if I can move it around so I can read it. I've been thinking about transitioning to a more ketogenic, and looks like they really avoid sugar of all kinds. I'd like to hear Adam's ideas on a ketogenic diet.
So far, I haven't seen any results, because no one, certainly not the cavemen, ever did a ketogenic diet. They ate, as Dr. Cowan correctly pointed out, lots of vegetables with their meat, so they couldn't go ketogenic. And if you want to go ketogenic, starve. One day of fasting and you'll be ketogenic, because ketogens happen when you starve. So it's the so-called Inuits and the Eskimos were supposed to be on ketogenic diets. They blew that apart as soon as they examined them. They eat vegetables. They even pick poop off the ground and eat the poop to get the minerals. So they don't, and they eat a variety of foods, and they're definitely not ketogenic. Now, I'm not going to say that ketogenic is bad. I'm just saying it hasn't been done yet. So it will be interesting to see in 50 years these centenarians that show up. They may show up. I hope I'm around to see what happens. So I'm neutral on it. I'm curious to see, and I applaud people that are being experiments to try it, because they're being our lab rats to see. If they get rewarded by good results and live long, more power to them.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, talk to me when you're 90.
That's it, exactly. That's the rule to me. And I'm a reporter, not a health expert till I'm 90.
That's right. When you're 90 and you still feel good and you can do whatever you want, then you're becoming an expert, right?
That's when I get to say anything could happen. I could slip on a banana peel too. God forbid.
Patrick is coming up to a big twelve is a big cycle, right? So I'm going to do 6x6 12s in November of 72 revs. So it's kind of an exciting 12-12, 12-6. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Did you have anything really, really trippy happen on your 72 when you did the 12 cycles in your life?
It was shortly after I got here, so this was a really important place to be. You know, I met Vibrant Gal and everything like that, but I think I met her the year before that. I have to look back and see what I was doing at 72, and maybe I'll report it to you next month or sooner by email.
12 cycles are big in my world, are big ones.
12 disciples, 12 elements, on and on. There's all kinds of
everything,
uses.
Right? Yeah. There's 12 zodiac signs. I mean.
And Adano's Solar Nutrition had 12 basic minerals and a Christ. It was called iodine.
And say that again?
Christ was iodine, and the other 12 disciples were the other minerals. And by memory, let me see, this is going to be tough. The 12 basic minerals of Solar Nutrition are potassium and phosphorus, magnesium and manganese, iron and sodium, silicon, sulfur. What am I missing? I think I'm missing a couple. But anyway, basically, those were the 12 basic minerals of Solar Nutrition, and iodine was the one that was their guru and keeps them all in line. So you do need a certain amount of iodine. The Automedon has low enough numbers, those big numbers are kind of scary, both to the CDC and to a lot of authorities. I wrote a book on why not to abuse iodine and how you can get a goiter from too much iodine just as much as you can from too little iodine.
Yeah, we like that Agrocase iodine, the one we promote. I just do a few drops on my wrists, and I think it's fine. All these high doses of iodine doesn't, I don't know, doesn't make sense
much.
To me.
I mean, Tomidine is a different type of iodine.
It is.
In high school, I discovered Edgar Cayce, Joseph Millard's mystery, Edgar Cayce, Mystery Man of Miracles, and it changed my life. I became an Edgar Cayce nut for years, way before Thomas, Jess Stern came out with the Edgar Cayce books. I was reading Thomas Sugro and Gina Sermonara. That was all you could get then, four or five books at that time. Now, there's probably over 1,000 Edgar Cayce books out there.
Yeah. We have the Tomidine, or the Real Detoxified Iodine, in our store and also in Iodine Source. Just click down there and you can get it. And very inexpensive, and you don't need a lot. And Phil will send you the directions. Well, he has the directions on the website, but he's not a big fan of using these huge doses. What does Adam think about red light, how to use it, and which is the best way to use it?
I wrote a book about it, too. It's on our website. And basically, we use it every night. We have a chicken brooder lamp, the 250-watt. There's some argument whether 130 volts or 120 work. I don't see that much difference per se. So you just get the chicken brooder light that has red. We have it about 20 feet away from us at all times. We leave it on most of the evening.
I'll be done.
And it's good. We turn it off when we go to sleep because I believe that you do need a certain amount of darkness. Most people with red light will preserve their melatonin for the evening. Some people are sensitive to red light, though, and will even lose their melatonin. And that would have to be checked out some way. And that's beyond my pay grade.
I've got a new little gadget. It's called Iris. Have you ever heard of that one? And it puts a nice little red light tint on your computer. And I kind of like that. Kind of like the...
Yeah, we have Flux, so there's different varieties, and we use that, too.
Flux is more... Is it red? I think it's more blue, isn't it, Flux?
No, Flux is actually in their red. What?
Is it?
Orange. And by the way, the true color that is the healing color is red-orange.
Red-orange,
and
yeah.
You'll find that in Gaudi Ali. Even Ray Pete talks about that this chicken light, its benefit of the heat lamp is it goes from orange through red and an infrared. To experience the infrared, you have to go up and feel the heat from it. That's what infrared is. You can't see infrared. It's not visible light. So, but the main healing part is the visible light, not the infrared. But if you go your hands on, you get a little extra boost. So sometimes I open my mouth and expose it to the heat of the infrared lamp or a part of my area that I've overworked, maybe sweeping outside or something like that. And I get a little infrared, too. It's a good vibration.
So infrared light, and they got some of these contraptions, you can't see that at all, zero, nothing.
Can't see it at all. If you see it, you're seeing the red light that's the byproduct of it. And actually, the red light is the power behind the drone, because if you take a flashlight and shine it through your hand, you can't get any other color of light but red. If you did, you'd be dead because ultraviolet kills us. But because our body has developed a way of breaking the light down into red and then transforming it into cholesterol, testosterone, vitamin D of many kinds. They just sell you one in the vitamin store, but actually we can make about 100 different types of vitamin D. They're making synthetic ones now to try and duplicate that, but why do that when we can make it from our own light? So all of this, you will get red light regardless, and the most healing time to get red light during the day is exactly like Jack Cruz and Meridian Grace says, sunrise and sunset. That's when you get the red light.
But just having the red light, even if it's not close at night, is good for you.
Yep, we keep it, we're about 20 feet away from it. Now, sometimes I go nap on the couch and it's about 2 or 3 feet away from me. And sometimes I turn it off when I nap and sometimes I don't. We usually, after we eat, we kind of move around, do some stuff on the computer, then take a little nap. And then we get up again and oil pull about 2 in the morning. And then we go to bed again for an hour or two. Tonight, I think I only slept about an hour or two.
It's fun. It's fun doing stuff in the middle of the night. I've been doing yoga at 3 o'clock, and sometimes I get up and write on my screenplay or my book, and it's just kind of fun. I kind of let go of the idea of sleeping through the night. You know, it seems like it's just, I'm so over that. You know.
You know, paleontologists, if that's the correct word, have pretty much anthropologists mm-hmm. have pretty much figured out that. People used to sleep in split shifts.
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, they needed to guard against saber-toothed tigers and whatever else was out there. I think we go back as far as dinosaurs, so even those, wolves, whatever. So you needed shifts to sleep in, and people generally did that. And so they commonly woke up at night and got together and had a social events at, gallbladder time or something like that, or liver time, and then went back to sleep and learned to sleep in a lot different ways than we're trained today. We're trained because they want us to show up at work bright and bushy tail to push buttons in a computer or in an automobile plant, and they want us down all night. But a true liberated person, they don't have to follow that kind of Mickey Mouse schedule.
Yeah, I agree. And I think all this REM stuff, and you got to do this so many hours, I think it's all nonsense. I mean, I can be soul traveling, which people call dreaming, and I'm conscious of my experience and wake up, and then if I want to go back there, I can go back there, and I'm right back there. And so, you know, this whole REM thing, you got to be sleeping for 2 hours. I don't know. I don't think they know what they're talking about.
I don't think so either. I've met, of course, Swami Nitty Gritty didn't sleep at all, and neither did, I've met another woman that didn't sleep either.
Right.
And she didn't get tryptophan because her relatives were telling her she needed to sleep. And I said, do you feel bad? She said, no. I said, then why do you want to go to sleep? Well, what would I do at night? What do you like to do during the day? Read. And so instead of buying the tryptophan from me when I managed Scandia Health Food Store, she said, oh, thank you, thank you. She started crying and went home and stayed up all night.
That's great.
Baby.
Oh.
Baby.
Yeah. Oh.
You did something to me.
Always about a girl.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. Just thinking of you. Maybe things weren't right.
Oh, Bobby Lewis, man.
I love that song.
Tossing and turning. Turning and tossing. Tossing and turning.
I kicked the blankets on the floor.
That's great. Bobby Lewis, 1961. A moldy, oldy, goldie, moldy.
Right.
Go. Didn't sleep at all last night. That's great. Nah, yeah. It's so fun to be liberated.
And Master Chen, he sleeps about 1 or 2 hours a night, and he's perfectly healthy. In fact, he deliberately kept us awake because he said qi is developed best when you're half asleep and half awake. If you were too much awake, he kept you awake. And if you started to go to sleep on him, then he got out the bamboo and you were in trouble.
Speaking of liberated, I know a doctor in Wimberley who I talked to. He's going to be on the show. He's a cool guy. His name is Lane Sebring. And he says, you never come to see me. I said, well, I'm not sick. He said, well, I know. So it's funny. He always wants me to come see him, you know. So, but he got in trouble because he wrote this whole thing. I don't know why I think about this, but the liberation thing about that how it's not a good thing for girls to wear bras, you know, and the whole constraining and the cancer and the, you know, and the and all that stuff. And boy, the medical board in Texas, they were not happy with him. But they just gave him a hard time for doing that. It was hilarious.
You know, especially the bras that have those metal clips in them.
Oh, those don't want those things. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But do you think the other kind of normal kind of little ones are a problem or better? Or what does Vibrant Girl think?
It's kind of a yes, no, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as dangerous as some people say, but I think Bralis is probably healthier. We've been doing it for years. And the breast, if you know what you're doing in diet, you won't get them drooping down either. Keep that up by keeping the body young. You know, the condition of the skin and the muscles known as, Carter's reflex? That doesn't sound right. Cooper's muscle. So they call it Cooper's droop when the breasts droop. You keep that exercise and you don't get the droop. And then the extra weight doesn't keep pulling it down as long as you keep that part of your body in good shape.
Yeah, we did a show with a fellow. I don't know if you remember. They were in Hawaii, man and wife. They did a whole. They've written books about it. They have a whole organization, and they claim that the less you wear a bra, the more stronger they get. Really,
I think that's correct.
I forget the fellow's name, but you can just put bras or breasts or something on a search engine, and hear the show. It's really, really interesting. Oh, Dress to Kill, the name of his book, Dress to Kill.
Now, a lot of clothes get us in trouble. At least we're not wearing corsets anymore, because so many hundreds of women died from wearing corsets in their 20s and 30s, about 150 years ago.
Oh, I bet so. So what's the exercise called to keep the breasts all kind of nice and firmy? Is it called Cooper's?
Cooper's suspensory ligament is the name of it. And if you do things with your arms, like on the pec deck, and which is in the gym, if you know that machine that you pull back and do the pec deck where you pull your arms together.
Oh, yeah, where you're just pulling. Yeah, you're just like in front of you, right?
And certain dumbbell exercises and a minimum of bench presses and things like that. Mostly you want to do the barbell exercises that work different angles of those muscles. If you take the Touch for Health book and exercise those muscles at the gym, you're actually exercising the reflexes to those muscles and the lymphatics and the circulatory systems of those muscles, too, the Chapman reflexes.
Oh.
So I used to do that. They used to think I'm weird going in there and working your scapula muscles and your muscles like that. They wonder, what the heck is that guy doing? What kind of exercise is that? But all you have to do is, in Touch for Health, you see how to test the muscle. You exercise it in reverse. However they're pushing, you go against that. You find some way to lift a weight against it. Some of them are traditional. Some of them would be different, like for the muscle that goes into the pancreas, you would actually hold your hand straight up and do a lift in front of you, upward, and that lift you don't see done in the gym, but that will actually strengthen the anterior serratus muscle and work on your thyroid and your pancreas.
Pretty cool. Mona says, can Adam explain kind of the stick shift method of handling the loss of a gallbladder? So many of us who no longer have ours, will he ever be writing a book on this particular topic?
You know, might be an idea. I've mentioned it here, there, again, and probably in a blog, but basically eating on time is a stick shift method of making up for organ deficiencies that aren't on automatic anymore, because we can lose an organ. We can actually grow back a gallbladder if they, like tonsils, if they did a certain type of surgery, which they don't usually, unfortunately. But you can... if you eat smaller meals, eat them on time, you can be in stick shift and never have any extra pressure on the heart. And you can check it through muscle testing. The muscles involved with the gallbladder are the anterior deltoids, for instance. And as long as those are strong, it gives you a pretty good indicator that even though you've lost your gallbladder meridian, which is large, it's all over your head, one of the most lengthy meridians on your head and throughout your body. So as long as that is testing good, you basically have the meridian working.
Here's a lady. Yeah. She says she's 70 around the sun, 25 to 30 pounds lost from treatment. Sand surgery? I don't know. Two forms of cancer diagnosis this past February. ovaries removed, one half colon removed. Wow. Due to a 5-pound tumor. Wow, man. At this point in time, I'm detoxing with lots of red grapes and melons, salads, greens, veggies, avocados, using many detox herbal tinctures, capsules and stuff from Robert Morse. What does Adam think about this idea that I'm doing after all I've been through?
Eat them on time and make sure you acidify as well as alkalizing. The thing about cancer, it grows in an acid state, just like they say, but it spreads in an alkaline state. So when it's on the move, you want to have something that kills it at the point that you do. And there's a lot of so-called oxidants that work better. Remember, cancer grows in an antioxidant state. So you want an oxidant, which is correctly. So one thing is sulfur, right? To keep it from growing, you would take sulfur. When you're spreading, then you want to be cautious to have something out there that will kill it. And there's listed antioxidants for that. Now, when I use antioxidant, again, I'm using broad categories, and you need specific chemicals to do that. But this person, if they just put that in time, many people, by just eating the fruit that she's eating, use the fructose, which has such a bad rap now, and it actually can heal cancer, not cause cancer. So she's probably doing okay with what she's doing, adding a few more things and putting it in time.
Okay. If water would wash away glyphosates, writes an emailer, since the water is soluble, wouldn't some oils help to get rid of the oils in Monsanto's witch's brew?
Coconut oil and butter, you bet. And olive oil, even. We're mostly made of oleic acid. We're closer to an olive than a cow, ironically.
I feel more like an olive than a cow. I don't know about you, but I do. So coconut oil and butter, that'll wash away the glyphosates?
Well, if you're going to eat food that has water in, high water content, a carrot has 95%, and various vegetables usually have about 90%, and you drink liquids, I always combine it with something like coffee or something like that. Actually, coffee is one of the things that's anti-glyphosate, so coffee is a good thing. You know, I wouldn't recommend having 2 quarts of it at a time like I did when I had the flu, because it works for the flu, but I don't have the flu today, so I'm certainly not going to drink that much coffee at this time. Anyway, eating fruit and eating coffee and things that do detox, I'm not a total homeopath. I believe there is a purpose to do both. Homeopathy is a thief to catch a thief. Allopathy is a policeman to catch a thief. I think we need both, frankly. I'm a yes, no, maybe guy.
Yes, no, maybe guy. If you're on hold, stay there. We're going to get to you before we go. Wanted to ask, this one. Gail writes in, Patrick had asked Adam what the best nighttime foods are, but I don't think Adam completely elaborate on that. Could he do so now? Nighttime food. Because you had mentioned fish kind of moderate. So what other kind of things would be really good at nighttime for dinner?
Look at our body as 3 zones in it. From the lung up and the rib cage up, it's tree foods are your best bet. So anything that grows on a tree, like a coffee bean or an apple or a pear or a papaya or a Brazil nut, that's a morning food. Midday is between the rib cage and the pelvic bone, which is the smallest area, but we eat most of our food then, and that's going to be a vine food. Just like our intestines looks like vines, your growth pattern at that time goes in a spiral motion. Your morning foods, the trees go up into the sky. At nighttime, your roots and your fish go down into the earth. It's called geotropic resonance, where they go down into the earth. So basically, you eat your tree foods at morning, your vine foods and grain foods and grass foods at midday, and your root foods and your foods that grow slightly above the ground. Let me give you a simplistic rule. This doesn't catch everything in the net, but it catches most things. Eat everything in the morning that grows over 4 feet tall. Eat everything at midday that's from 4 inches to 4 foot tall, and eat everything from 4 inches below at night. And you'll be doing well enough to not worry about the little bitty things that slip through the net.
But then what other thing, I mean, what comes to mind for me would be beets and potatoes.
Nighttime.
Yeah, nighttime. But what other kind of things? I mean, we can't live on those.
Okay, let's see. Onions, turnips, beets, potatoes, sweet potatoes, garlic, onion, watercress, asparagus. Golly, there's hundreds of them. I think of what I've eaten. Herbs, maca, ginseng. You notice that all of the aphrodisiacs, like maca and ginseng, are roots, just like our root is what we call our apparatus, the male apparatus, mm-hmm. and works on the clitoris also. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if you name something that grows underground, and that's when you're going to eat it. Jicama, there's another one. Carrots, parsnips, there's a whole list. And on our solar timing site, of course, on our SunSync site, we have a complete food list in all dimensions. And I also, on solar timing, sell a book, which is nothing but an ebook, which is nothing but a giant food list and explanation of what are in those foods.
Carrots are good, right? Carrots?
Carrots are excellent, particularly when you grate them up, then it kills endotoxins. A raw carrot, strangely enough, it's hard for the human intestinal tract to digest it, but it is one of the best things to clean endotoxins, which are basically the poop from the microbiome, out of your body. They're polyunsaccharides. And anyone that has an endotoxin problem would take that carrot with maybe a little olive oil on it. We take that kind of grated salad just about every night.
Oh, is that the repeat idea? What is it, carrots and what else is it?
Just plain grated carrots.
Grated carrots, okay.
Yeah, and you can add a tiny bit of apple cider vinegar, a tiny bit. Too much disagrees with me, so I add just a pinch, and then a little bit of salt, and a little bit of olive oil, and you're good to go.
And that takes away some endotoxins that get flying around in there.
Mm. It apparently works really effectively. Now, I haven't seen the laboratory tests on that, and because when I discovered Ray-Pete, I changed about five or six things, most notably the oranges. I can't really tell, zigzag in exactly what did what. But so many people rave about that particular salad, I figure it can't hurt, and I eat it at nighttime.
I thought he'd mix something with it. Was it beets and carrots?
Well, I understand, and a tiny bit of vinegar.
I'll be done, yeah. No other vegetable, though.
Balsamic vinegar or something. I don't know what type of vinegar he uses.
No other vegetable. It's just carrots. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
By the way, we sent him all of our yellow fat books, so he hasn't commented on them yet.
Let's take this phone call. Good morning. On the phone, who's this? Hello? Oh. Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
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 Yeah, go ahead. Hi. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Julie. I have a question for Adam about having the oranges at, spring time. If we do the intermittent fasting, is it okay? I try not to eat or drink anything before noon. But is that okay to just wait till noon to do that?
That's something who recommends intermittent fasting. But to me, breakfast, as many people say, even Andrew Weil and a whole bunch of other standard authorities and unstandard say, is the most important time of the day. And stomach time sets that off. So I'm not obviously a fan of that type of intermittent fasting. Though I think fasting from time to time, particularly juice fasting, Swami Nitty Gritty used to have us drink juices alone on Saturdays because he said that was a particularly good way to approach what's called circa septum rhythms. He didn't use that term, but I found out since that is the immunity cycle, a seven-day immunity cycle that is well recognized by medicine these days.
So you're not a fan of the idea of skipping breakfast. You like to eat breakfast.
Not at all. And most people I know, some of the best athletes who eat one meal, because there's a difference between fitness and longevity. And eating one meal has benefits. I went to school with a guy that ate steak dinner for breakfast And he went on to be a famous athlete. Since I don't follow sports much, I forgot his name. But you can, when you have the correct metabolism in your teens, 20s, 30s, and even 40s, you can get away with just about any diet. Where it starts to creep up on people is when they start different diets in their 50s and 60s and 70s. Now, I believe this is not age, as they call it. This is 40 miles of bad road. There's a difference. You know, if you're driving your car on the freeway and you don't have bumps and potholes and all that kind of stuff, and you take care of your car, you're not going to have what's called age. But if you don't take care of the machinery and abuse it, then you're going to have what they call old age, and you're going to develop lipofuscin and every other chemical and cortisol and whatever, and be full of toxins, definitely, that need to be cleaned out. So I don't really believe in age per se. I think it's an idea. I think longevity is an idea whose time has come, frankly.
Well, and I have another question about, I've been getting my supplements from this Pure Bulk place online. Do you know anything about their products?
Well, you have to ask someone who has supplements. Even though I sold supplements by managing four health food stores at different times and managed the vitamin department and another one in Hawaii, I pretty much have given up supplements. They have a purpose. There are reasons to have supplements. People don't get to eat as pure as Vibrant Gal and I do. We buy 95% of our foods at the farmer's market locally. They even grow bananas in greenhouses and papayas and things all over the world here, even pineapple. So we're different than most people. There is definitely a need for supplements in people. And if you can't get, like someone I heard on your show said, they have really old carrots or something like that, well, then Dr. Cowan has the answer for that. Look at all the wonderful vegetables he has that you see on your site.
Boy, they're great.
Well, I mainly use the supplements when I'm making my dog's food, like the vitamin C, and because that's what I have a question about. Patrick, you had someone on the show named Marcus Rothkrant.
Right.
And he sells his own line of supplements, and he really goes into vitamin C and why ascorbic acid is not good at all because it's not the whole.
Right, right.
You know, the whole, like Adam says,
right,
the whole food is better. Mm-hmm. But like when I make my dog's food, you know, I just add, you know, vitamin C powder to it. And I just wondered what your feelings are.
Well, I think it's a good product. I bought that vitamin C. I like it because it's a whole kind of thing. It's just berries and stuff. And so I think he may be onto something with the ascorbic acid. We'll get Adam's opinion. I don't know. I think dogs make their own vitamin C, so I don't know if they need that. And you might check with the vet.
Well, they do when they get under stress or, you know.
Well, I don't know.
Been breeding
that's
them
a vet question. That's not for me, yeah.
But they do make their own, you're right.
They're the only one. Yeah, they make their own. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
I don't know if I would give my dog vitamin C if they make their own, but so have you... Are you on the same kind of wavelength with Marcus on having some real whole berries and all these different things? His formula looks pretty good, and it tastes fun.
Yes, no, maybe. Here's how you tell when you look at a supplement. Commercially, they only make vitamin C out of three items. They make it out of corn, tapioca, and sago palm.
Right.
Now, if your vitamin is over like 50 milligrams, they can't be getting it from berries and places
right.
But if it's down to 2 milligrams or something, then I agree, because the food-based vitamin C is an antioxidant. The commercially ones sold from corn, tapioca, and sago are oxidants.
Sure.
Now, oxidant is necessary for certain things and an antioxidant for others. So you could take one for an oxidant and get it from food as an antioxidant, even though I'm saying the primary vitamin C in food. There are actually hundreds of these vitamins, but for marketing purposes, they make one or so. If you're really getting a mixture of those berries, then you get a benefit of them. And unfortunately, people who do keto don't get a lot of those colors that make those antioxidants out.
Marcus uses, I don't have a financial interest in it, but I think he has good products. Kadu plum, whatever that is, K-A-K-A-D-U, highest source of vitamin G planet is Kubinja. You ever hear of that? K-U-B-I-N-G-E?
The thing to check, if he's over 50 milligrams, then he's adding vitamin C to them.
Pine needle, acerola berry, Indian gooseberry, sea buckthorn, watercress, rose hips, guava, lemon and orange peel. No, it's not over in that 50 at all, you know.
Right, because if you take, like, when you see acerola vitamin C at the health food store, they take a 55-gallon
drink. Yeah, they add it to it, right? Yeah.
And add a pinch to a spoonful to it, and that's both with the rose hips. Now, my mother was raised in Sweden. She ate the rose hips.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, he's got some numbers here, but this is all he's got in there, and he's not adding anything else, so... You know, it's just, that's what it is. So, yeah, I think something like this would be kind of a nice thing for the body to have. I don't know. Feels...
The one I'm, for vegetables, I'm really, I like the idea of what Dr. Cowan is doing by doing that.
Man.
Someone comes out with a fruit mixture like that, too. I noticed that Cowan's not much into fruit. So I would agree that you need your fruits because at one time, fruit was how we cleansed ourselves. It's biological Clorox, according to Adana Lay, and fruit used to be good for you. Look at Gypsy Boots. What did he say? Fruits and good things to eat, whatever. And that guy was, he could outdo 20-year-olds in tennis when he was in his mid-80s. I hung around with him extensively, and he ate mostly fruit.
I just got a few more Dr. Cowan's powders. I love them. My whole counter is full of them. He has a new one, kale. And a new one, spinach, and he's got some really fun things that we would never eat, you know, like some of these heritage vegetables. And dehydration, like he's doing it, it does really preserve a lot of the goodness, doesn't it?
Yeah, cause from other foods, you can get the enzymes and things they talk about.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you get the minerals and things. And when you have people, I think there was someone on your show complained about a woody carrot in their area. And then the answer to that is to simply get a dried, good vegetable from a reliable person like Dr. Cowan. Because I have disagreements with him on certain things, but I certainly am an admirer of Dr. Cowan.
And I just bought his book about vegetables, and it really makes sense to get a wide variety because they got so many different things going on, and we don't eat a lot of different ones, but... He's got wild ramp, which is a great thing, and leeks, and, you know, fun things that I wouldn't normally eat, burdock, and, yeah, man, turmeric, you know, cool stuff. These are great. Let's see. One of my friends has pulmonary edema. She is taking sulfur, which she says has kept her alive, but she's told it's incurable. Can you please ask Adam what we can do, and or how could I help with pulmonary edema? Thank you. So what pulmonary, I know edema, pulmonary is lungs. You get edema in the lungs?
Yes, and I don't believe anything is incurable.
Oh, of course not.
I have seen cases where they said it's impossible to be healed. And there's the case of the man, remember he had fish scale disease.
Right.
No sweat glands, but because he didn't know, the hypnotist didn't know, he didn't have a rash, and he didn't know, so he convinced this guy to grow new sweat glands, which medical doctors, if you told them that, would say it's impossible.
Right.
In fact, when he presented this to the British, whatever they call their version of the AMA, the director said it's impossible. So the hypnotist now was hypnotized that it didn't work, and he gave up hypnotism because it wouldn't work anymore. So yes, you can get rid of it, and pulmonary edema, whenever you have edema, you have over-alkalinity. You must acidify yourself naturally, and that is by protein. And, of course, sulfur is part of protein. And when you eat various forms of protein, even beans, despite what Ray Pete says about beans, he's not a big fan of them, but You can get it from meat, which is a primary sauce. You can get it from fish. Fish does have a good, particularly the warm water fish is better than the cold water fish. And what else? The beans, sprouts, spirulina. There's all kinds of protein sources to get that rid of pulmonary edema. And I've seen it go away. I've seen
what it is.
Say,
what is it exactly? Is it something in the lungs or what is it?
Yeah, it's basically fluid in the lungs.
Fluid. Fluid in the lungs.
Just like, instead of you having your ankles all swollen up like waste paper baskets, you know, elephant paper baskets, you get your lungs swollen. And of course, they say it's fatal and it's nonsense. Anything can cause anything and anything can cure anything. So once a person gives up hope, that's the worst thing. Learned helplessness kills people. If you take a rat and throw him in the water and he starts swimming, he will drown in less than an hour. If you take two rats and put them in and you pull one out after 20 minutes, that other rat will swim for more than 24 hours because now he has hope.
And
what does the profession say? Sorry, you are got a fatal disease. You're going to die. You need chemotherapy. Oh, will the chemotherapy help? No, you'll just die sooner or later.
Yeah. It's a shame. You know, I remember 5-6 years ago, I had a little edema thing going on, and I used some herb from Darcy. Remember Darcy from the forest gal we had on a few times?
I do.
And she sent
me
a little bottle of Pipsissewa herb. And I'll tell you what, in 24 hours, man, it was gone. So I don't know what it did. I think it works on the kidneys, doesn't it?
Probably. And the kidneys do have a lot to do with edema. Edema, I got rid of it with the orange
I
started.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have a bad case of it, but I was concerned because I'd never had edema before. And I thought, what the heck is happening? Well, now with the oranges, I don't have a trace of it. I'm knocked on wood.
Yeah. So you do your oranges in the morning, and then also sometimes you can do them, you said, that at midnight too, right?
If I feel I need extra one before I go to bed, then I will have it. Or if, like on the farmer's market, we come back too late and we'll have to skip breakfast to do the orange, then I have it at liver time before I go to bed the following night. But I always get in one in every 24-hour period, and 6 out of 7 days usually is that spleen pancreas time.
And what do you do, 2 or 3 oranges and juice it?
Just one. That's all I did at first to make up for lost time. I was having 2 in the morning and 2 in the evening. We were buying a lot of oranges. And then Vibrant Gal was doing 1 a day and sometimes 2 a day. Now I do 1 a day, basically, and she does 1 a day, and that's about it. And we, 1 a day. So 7 a week.
So just juice 1 orange, and that spleen pancreas time really is good for you.
Yeah, we get some really good oranges. They're watered with well water in Ojai, California.
Wow.
We know growers for years. They're really neat people. And it's really good when you know the provider of your food and you know they're taking good care of it. And we've been really lucky that way. Most people, I wish they had the same advantage of doing that, you know.
Plus you get that great Krishnamurti vibe in Ojai oranges.
Definitely. I actually shook hands with Krishnamurti when he was still alive. And he used to give his lectures in the woods. He would go out into the oaks, and then he would talk to you.
Boy, I read almost every book he wrote years ago, 30, 40 years ago. Really.
He was a great man.
Oh, man, he was the real deal. Real deal. Well, Adam, you're the real deal, and Vibrant Gal, and let's see, it's 10 o'clock there. It's almost time for an orange.
Yeah. By the way, someone probably in Dripping Springs is getting married. I found out it's the wedding capital of Texas.
The wedding capital of Texas. That's right.
1,000 people a year get married there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Andy Goss's daughter got married here, and beautiful place. I mean, under this huge oak tree, and they have quite a few places where people come and they get married here in Dripping Springs, Texas, the wedding capital of the world.
Yeah, you know, I was wondering about that. When I heard that statistic, I thought, I bet Andy's daughter got married there.
He did. She did. Yeah, we had a great time.
All right.
We had a great time. Big wedding. Yeah. Well, when I get old enough, I think I might get married too. But, you know,
It
takes a long time to get young. I'm just quite not mature enough for that thing, I guess. All right, kiddo. Well, we love you. Thanks for everything. And You have two websites, Sunsink Nutrition, and also that's the pay $99 forever. And I mean, see, like Amazon does $99 a year. You're like $99 forever. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And you're in the inner circle.
That's right. The inner circle. And then also solartiming.com. And Adam does a blog every few days on One Radio Network, which we're very grateful, and people love it. And he interacts on a blog, so if you have a question, he always is there. I see his little answers, and he's right on top of it. So you guys are great. We're going to come see you soon. I keep promising, but, well, it could be a good time in the fall to be in Montecito, right?
All in divine timing,
yep,
you bet.
All good things and all good time. All right, brother, thanks a lot. We love you, and don't forget, next month we're going to probably be all video, so watch out. Whew.
All right.
All right, kiddo.
Going to comb my eyebrows.
Yeah, comb your eyebrows. See you real soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. I love you all very much. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your ongoing support. Had to mention Sulfur a lot. It's a great product. You can try it. We have some really good people we deal with and know this source is our trademark. So I really trust all the different things that we, you know, not necessarily that you need everything that we promote, but that's how we make a living. So look around in our store on our front page. If you see something that tickles your fancy, well, explore it. If you have questions about it, email me. And if you choose to spend some of your dollars on this kind of stuff, we appreciate it if you do it here. It helps us. And so we do real fine, and we are grateful that we are able to, you know, come up here in our shorts and a little t-shirt and do our show, and it looks like we may have to actually comb our hair and shave before we come on. We do video, which we're going to do, so, oh well. I can deal with it. It's not the... I'm just grateful to be able to make a living doing this. I love you all very much. Thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow. And may the blessings be.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.